Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Of Manny Ramirez, recent recipient of a two-year, $45 million contract with the Los Angeles Dodgers, it can be said that A, he has been and sometimes still is almost pathologically shy. B, he has been the beneficiary of several mentors who have helped him make the transition from child of Washington Heights, New York, to spectacularly wealthy baseball star. C, he has the ability to, quote, transcend the known world and enter a mystical flow. And D, all of the above. When I spoke this week with Gene Rhodes and Sean Boberg, the co-authors of Becoming Manny, Inside the Life of Baseball's Most Enigmatic Slugger, I began the conversation by asking Gene Rhodes, a psychology professor, what had provoked her to write an authorized biography of Ramirez.
Well, for years I've been studying mentoring relationships, the relationships kids have with coaches, teachers, and other caring adults, and I had been hearing about Manny's relationship with a particular Little League coach over the years. And Manny's an interesting character, and that's a kind of relationship that interests me, and I thought this would be an interesting lens through which to understand Manny and mentoring.
And Sean, clearly you and Gene recognized that a biography entitled Macaco the Mentor was probably not going to be a great hit with the publishers.
Well, you know, the project started out really with more of a focus on that relationship. And as we got to know more about other coaches that Manny had the pleasure of working with growing up, we realized that he really adopted these mentors, and they adopted him also. Mm-hmm. So we realized that his life, and mostly his childhood, we had plenty of opportunities to tell similar stories. And, of course, it's Manny Ramirez, so his life is interesting.
This is an authorized biography. And now, usually, that means that the people writing the book have the cooperation of the subject of the book. Gene, to what extent was Manny Ramirez involved in this project?
Well, his interest and involvement kind of came and went as the years went by.
Why am I not surprised?
I would say, you know, when he was initially approached by his mentor, because that was really Sean and our angle into it. Sean befriended his mentor in Washington Heights, and his mentor approached Manny, and Manny said no, and we said try again, and Manny said yes eventually. He was initially quite interested. Over the years, he participated in interviews. He invited us to his house in Weston, Florida. He invited us to his apartment here in Boston. We talked to him on the phone. But also importantly, he opened the door to his family in a way I don't think anyone's ever had access to.
Who else besides family members and Manny's mentor, who is nicknamed Macaco, who else was most useful to you in your attempt to come to understand Manny Ramirez?
Well, I'll start with a guy out in Brooklyn named Mel Zitter. And he was a man who started mentoring Manny and coaching Manny when Manny joined his Sandlot team, and really stayed with him and pushed him and met his intensity in a way that I would say few coaches could. He actually raised the bar for Manny, which was hard because Manny already had a pretty intense work ethic to begin with. So Mel Zitter's at the top of the list, as well as other coaches, Steve Mandel from Washington Heights High School, George Washington High School, his family members, of course. And Sean talked to a lot of his high school teammates.
Mm-hmm. Manny, as a lot of people haven't figured out, is most real, and he's himself. He's most relaxed when he's not in the spotlight, which is why I think in a lot of cases he's misunderstood. So that's why talking to his teammates in childhood and the people who he really relaxes in front of was so crucial to this project. We saw sides of him that haven't really been portrayed.
It's interesting that you bring it up that way, because in the introduction in part reads that Manny is least known as a dedicated athlete, a well-regarded teammate, and a beloved father, husband, and son. I'm wondering if in writing this book you felt you had to defend Manny against the impression that he's sometimes been an irresponsible teammate and employee.
No, I think what we tried to do is acknowledge his faults. I mean, he's made some poor decisions in his career. Sometimes they are not out of malice. They're not as mean-spirited as they're interpreted. And other times I think that he just didn't think things through. Manny's a guy who lives in the moment. And sometimes I think his decisions aren't the most well thought out. But there are also tons of occasions where he's found himself in the news and hasn't really explained his side. And a lot of times standing up and speaking truthfully would have alleviated a lot of these controversies.
And I'll say this, that because he gave so little of himself, and he does, he protects his privacy fiercely, people project a lot of things onto him. And sometimes those things that are projected onto him are stereotypical or based on his baggy pants and his dreadlocks and him not hustling to first base, when in fact he's probably one of the hardest workers in the sport.
In writing about Manny's exceptional success as a hitter, you maintain that he has the ability to, quote, transcend the known world. This is not the kind of writing one usually finds in a book about a baseball player, and enter a mystical flow characterized by feeling invincibility, confidence, and calm. It sounds like a trance. Maybe you should write another book that teaches other hitters how to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people have written about this. I mean, it's a psychological thing called flow, and there's books about it, flow in sports. Inner tennis is another example of it. But I do think Manny's a master of it, and I think that's really one of the things that sets him apart, is this ability to kind of block out everything around him and really lock into the ball. And there's perhaps nobody more brilliant at that moment in time.
At doing that particular thing. Right,
right. And, in the book, we liken him to sort of an absent-minded professor, somebody who's got, this incredible focus and specialized talent, but is as hopeless as a lamb outside the university.
Last week, ESPN's Colleen Dominguez interviewed Manny Ramirez and asked him, among other things, about his goals. Let's listen to just a little bit of that exchange.
I'm happy with my family. I'm happy with my teammates. So I don't got to accomplish anything.
So you don't have any goals at this point?
No goals. My only goals, I want to see my kids going to college. I want them to be my friends. That's my goals.
Sean, the obvious answer to that question about goals after you've just signed a contract worth $45 million is my goal is to lead the Dodgers to a world championship. Were you surprised that Manny answered that question as he did?
No, not at all. I think Manny is one of the most driven people that I've been around in his particular field. He often gives these answers that don't reveal much and sometimes even mislead in a way that really pushes away from the truth.
You know, you can say that he gives answers that don't reveal much, but when I heard him say, I just want my children to be my friends and for them to go to college, I thought it revealed a great deal. I thought it was, I got misty-eyed when I heard that answer. It was lovely.
Well, I think in some ways there is a truth to that. And Sean and I write about how he doesn't focus on the outcome. He focuses on the process. The goals are very much his own internal goals about his family, but also about, he talked about wanting to hit 700 home runs by the end of his career. So I think he's got goals, but they're not the same ones that really are probably more conventional about winning championship series and so forth.
One of the things that frustrated some Boston fans when Manny Ramirez was playing for the Red Sox was the way he would bounce between saying that Boston was a great place to be and then demanding to be traded. What accounted for that apparent inconsistency?
Well, I think that's been a theme. He makes up his mind before he's really decided on something. He says one thing and means another. He's not really trying to put together and project a particular image. He says what he's feeling at that moment. And in particular times, he felt very good in Boston when he had teammates that were closer to him in character and culture. I think he did feel closer to Boston. And when he began to feel the distrust and scorn of the fans and management, I think he began to not feel very comfortable. The particular qualities of Manny that we've been talking about, this ability to lock into the ball, to enter this flow state, and the social anxiety are really what define Manny. he doesn't really like all the subterfuge surrounding the game. He likes to get in the box and hit.
How do you think he feels about being defined? I mean, I'm sitting here listening to you two sort of talk about who and what Manny is. How does he feel about being analyzed, I wonder?
Well,
he probably doesn't pay any attention to it.
One time he did, you know, I said, I was talking with Manny and I said, you know, I've been following you and talking to people who know you for years and I feel like I have a pretty good idea of you. And he just smiled, this huge grin. He said, who am I?
Well, of his final season in Boston, you write, aware that his time with the team was coming to an end, Manny was hard-pressed to give his best to a team he knew was eager to cast him aside. But he had begged team owner John Henry to trade him a couple of times, and there are those who would argue that for $20 million a year, Manny should have been able to somehow motivate himself to give his best, that really shouldn't have been a problem. What's the comeback to that?
If you look at the stats in that last month, he did pretty well. He took as many at bats as other players, and his numbers are great. What became clear, and I think that he couldn't suppress this any longer, is that Boston wasn't a place for him. I think there are all sorts of reasons. Number one, it's really small, it's an insulated, compact city. I think it's more buttoned up than Manny would like. I mean, he grew up in New York in Washington Heights, and the contrast couldn't be any greater. When you're in that spot where you're not happy, I think it's probably hard to motivate yourself. That's not to excuse any of his decisions, but I think it did weigh on him mentally.
Gene, I want to get back to this idea of how well you got to know Manny. He hit exceptionally well for the Dodgers once he got to L.A. last summer, regular season and in the playoffs as well. He recently signed a 2-year contract worth $45 million. It feels like a silly question, but do you suppose he's happy now?
Well, he certainly seems happy. I think L.A. is a really good spot for him. It's a city that is used to having celebrities in its midst, so they're not going to stalk him the same way, and they're not going to parse out every move and mistake he makes in the same way, and he feels that. He has words that he used with Sean and I, you know, it didn't feel comfortable. I feel calm here. You know, he's very much caught up in how he feels in a particular context, and I think L.A. is a good one for him.
Gene Rhodes is the co-author of Becoming Manny, Inside the Life of Baseball's Most Enigmatic Slugger, published by Scribner. Thank you very much for speaking with me.
You're welcome.
And we've been joined by co-author Sean Boberg. Sean, thanks very much.
Thank you.
My conversation with Gene Rhodes and Sean Boberg will be featured on this week's program. I'll also be talking with Jeff Blair of the Globe and Mail about the World Baseball Classic, an international affair that can only be characterized as topsy-turvy, especially if you're viewing it from either Amsterdam or San Pedro de Macorís. We'll have a story about Major League Soccer's newest franchise, the Seattle Sounders, and Tales from the Plumbers Olympics. And if you don't know what the Plumbers Olympics are, I suppose you'd better listen to the show. And remember, you can always hear the program by visiting onlyagame.org.